All right, welcome back inside the New Orleans Convention Center. Zach Gelb here with you on Radio Row. We're getting you set for the big game, Super Bowl 59. And if I knew my next guest was going to be wearing his jacket, I would have.
You would have worn
so
yours,
well.
Man. You'd be looking good in a starter satin Crown Royal jacket right now.
For a radio host, I think my shirt today looks pretty damn good.
You know, I think it does look good.
But I do have my starter jacket, Crown Royal, in the hotel lobby. There's a big event on Saturday that I'm going to.
Yeah.
But appreciate you stopping on by. How you been?
Yeah, been really good. You?
So, fantastic. Let me start you off with the Hall of Fame, because I live in New York, and there's always this debate about Eli Manning. I think he's a Hall of Famer. I don't know if he'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer. Do you think Eli should be a first ballot Hall of Famer?
Yeah, I'd say this. I mean, when you look at the body of work, obviously Eli played a long time. And playing for one team, I think, says a lot as well. And in a market like New York. Man, two-time Super Bowl champ. Beat Tom Brady with both of those. I mean, look, he was the Iron Man, too, from the perspective of, you know, longevity and durability. You know, really, I don't think he ever missed a game because of injury, you know. It doesn't mean he didn't have them. He absolutely did. So, look, I think when you look at the body of work, he had a really, really impressive career.
So we were actually talking about you the other day because I saw that Coach Saban was on with Channing Crowder and Ryan Clark and Fred Taylor at the Pivot. And I say it's the greatest what if in the history of sports. If the Dolphins would have just cleared you and you would have gone there, you would have had direct competition with Tom Brady inside the AFC. Saban probably stays with the Dolphins, Alabama, even the Saints storyline. Do you ever, it worked out for you, clearly. You become one of the great quarterbacks of all time, and you win a Super Bowl, and you're beloved in this city. But do you ever wonder what would have happened if you did go to Miami?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty wild to think of the what-ifs, you know? That was at a time when, you know, look, the Patriots had just come off of, three Super Bowl victories, you know, in what, 02, 04, 05. That Brady-Belichick thing was, you know, clicking. The irony is, you know, here's Saban, who was kind of a Belichick disciple, in a lot of ways. Had coached for him with Cleveland Browns, had obviously had a ton of success through college. I played against him at Michigan State 3 years, and then he goes to LSU, wins a national championship, and then becomes head coach of the Dolphins. But now he's in the same division as the Patriots, you know. And then, you know, me, I played against Tom Brady in college, you know, when he was at Michigan, I was at Purdue. And, you know, had I become, you know, Saban's quarterback, you know, it could have been some interesting storylines. But, look, I think it all worked out. Obviously, Saban and his career at Bama. And then, you know, my journey here to New Orleans, which, you know, truly was a calling for me and my wife, and having a chance to play with Sean Payton, for Sean Payton, who was a guy who really believed in me at a time when, you know, I needed it most, you know. I mean, he was very clear at the start of free agency, like, you're our guy, you know, and I have no doubts that you're going to be able to come back from the shoulder injury, and I know it's going to take some time, and, you know, we all got to work through that, but, you know, you're our guy, and we're going to build this offense around you. Gave me a ton of confidence, and, you know, we were able to build something pretty special here for a long time.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm glad that you bring up Sean, because I remember doing those shows on draft night, and there was a lot of people surprised with the pick at 12 in Bo Nix, because a lot of people just didn't have him going that early. But the big takeaway from that was Sean found his next Drew Brees. He found his next quarterback. Since you took, right, with Sean, the highest level you could go, and you had an all-time great career, what is that like for you when you're at the point now where Sean's with somebody else and they're saying, okay, this could be his Drew Brees in Denver?
I mean, look, I see a reinvigorated, you know, rejuvenated Sean Payton. You know, look, he had an incredible run here with the Saints, you know, with me as his quarterback for every year except for one, you know. And, you know, he steps away just to kind of recalibrate, and, you know, then gets the opportunity in Denver, which is kind of like, hey, you know, we get to build this thing from the ground up again. A really prideful, storied organization, but, you know, you can, in this league, man, you got to go find your cue, you know, and who's going to be your quarterback. And it seemed like Sean got the guy that he wanted, despite having, you know, the 12th pick and getting the sixth quarterback off the board. Like, that was his guy. I mean, truly, you know, Sean is going to do his own evaluation, and he's not going to listen to anybody else. Like, he's just, he has a way of player evaluation where he can see a guy and he just immediately has a vision for him, you know, based on what he knows he's going to be capable of, how he's going to assimilate into the offense or the defense, into the team dynamic. And it's one of his great strengths, is being able to, I think, evaluate players in that way. And he obviously saw something in Bo that made him his guy, and he was able to get him at the 12th pick miraculously. And I think you saw you know, Bo Nix's maturation throughout the year and the way that offense opened up and just the way they built confidence. And, you know, you got to think the future's pretty bright there with those two.
Drew Brees here with Dustin Half of Crown Royal. Is it crazy to you because, right, you had such a successful career. Peyton Manning has had such a successful career. Aaron Rodgers towards the end of his career. Like, those are three great quarterbacks, top 10 quarterbacks, top 15 quarterbacks of all time. But I was talking about the other day, someone asked me, you know, who's the three best quarterbacks to ever play the game? And I said, Brady's one, Montana right now is two, and then I did put Mahomes already at three to see how quickly, from a history standpoint, with so much career still to go where Mahomes is already at, is that just wild to you already?
Yeah, I mean, what the guy's been, what was this? This was year eight for him.
Yeah.
But seven as a starter, you know, and so in 7 years as a starter, he's played in five Super Bowls and potentially, you know, going for a fourth and a three-peat, which is unprecedented, never been done with this sport. So, I mean, right away, and based on just what we're all seeing with our own eyes too, you know, regardless of the statistics, you'd say, you know, he certainly belongs in the category, you know. I think there is a longevity component to this, you know. Like, you look, Brady played 23 years. Obviously, Montana played a long time. And really, Montana, I'd say, was, I think, the guy that a lot of us looked at as youngster. I know he was Brady's guy. You were growing up in Northern California, San Mateo. And, me being a Texas kid, it was funny because there was that Cowboy-Niners dynamic, you know, and I was a Cowboys fan as a kid. But at the same time, I'm looking at Joe Montana like, man, that's kind of my guy as far as stature.
Sure.
And, you know, not the biggest, not the strongest arm, you know, all these things. And yet, man, just methodical, right? Just precision. And so I garnered a lot of inspiration from Joe growing up. I think the longevity thing and doing the body of work, you know, doing it over an extended period of time at a very, very high level, that consistently, to me, that is what greatness is. It's that high level of production consistently over a long period of time.
Now, on the other side, when you get Jalen Hurts, Drew Brees, do you feel like he's disrespected as a quarterback? Because I feel as if everyone praises everyone around him rather than give him his due for what he's been able to do pretty much 4 years as a starter and having a pretty successful rate going to two Super Bowls.
Yeah. Look, it's really impressive. And I definitely think there's a chip on his shoulder, you know. And
that goes back to
Bama. Yeah, look, I think he does a great job of being kind of tactful with that, you know. You can kind of see it in his eyes. You know, he seems like he's somewhat of a quiet leader. Like, you know, obviously he speaks up when he needs to, and guys respect him when he does. But he just seems like one of those guys who's very poised, you know, and under control, and, man, knows what he's got to do, has this vision for where he's going to be, where he wants to be, and, man, he's on his way. I love his journey. He's a Texas kid. I was a Texas kid. Yeah. You know, goes to Bama. That early success, you know, as a starter, starting as a true freshman, playing in the national championship against Clemson, right? And then all of a sudden that whole situation with Tua, where now he's a backup, and, you know, you got to swallow your pride a little bit, and yet, you know.
And stayed the next year.
He stayed. That's what I'm saying. He stayed. And then, yeah, exactly. Comes in, and basically they don't win the national championship that year without him.
Yeah.
And then transfers to Oklahoma, has a phenomenal senior year, you know, gets them in the top four. And then, you know, but still, like, every step of the way, it's like, hey, drafted in the second round. Why not the first? You know, and so I think he definitely carries a chip on his shoulder, and I think that served him well.
I don't know if you know yet, but I hope that we find out tonight that Antonio Gates gets in the Hall of Fame, because I thought, hey, the process is the process, but to me, it was bull crap that he didn't make it last year.
It's look, to me, it's an absolute no-brainer. I understand that, man, the Hall of Fame voters have a really, really tough job, because you can make a strong case for everybody who's on that list. But specifically to Antonio Gates, he's statistically, he is the most prolific tight end in NFL history, right?
No one needs to justify.
And I think, like, look no further than, go talk to some of the greatest tight ends of all time. Go talk to Tony Gonzalez. Go talk to Gronk. Talk to Kelsey. Listen to them talk about Antonio Gates. Like, so many of those guys are like, man, I used to watch that guy. Like, I aspired to be like that guy, right? Like, to me, somebody asked me to define what are the qualities of a Hall of Fame player. I think you look at the body of work, you know, you can look at the statistics, you look at the accomplishments, but I think you also have to ask yourself something like, talk to people who either coached against him or had to play against him or played the same position, and get their feedback. And if the answer is, like, man, he was the one guy we were always worried about, or he's the one guy I wanted to be like, or, and then the other question is, did this guy do something to revolutionize the game? Did he change the game? Antonio Gates changed the game for the tight end position. We were the first ones in San Diego when I was playing with Gates to split out the tight end as a receiver to the single receiver side. He was covered by a corner, and he would get open consistently, right? Like, that revolutionized the game. I go to New Orleans, and we started doing that with Shockey. We started doing that with Jimmy Graham. Gronk would do that in New England. So, like, truly revolutionized the game for the position. To me, that criteria right there has him as a shoe.
And I'm 30 years old, kid growing up on Long Island. There's no reason for kids to have Antonio Gates jerseys. Antonio Gates, LaDainian Tomlinson, Ray Lewis, and Chad Johnson
were
probably the four most popular non-giant jerseys growing up on Long Island that people would wear. Tell us what you're doing today on behalf of Crown Royal.
Yeah, so this is awesome. Crown Royal's been the official whiskey sponsor of the NFL here for the last 4 years, but they've been a huge supporter of our foundation, the Breeze Dream Foundation, in all of our efforts here in Louisiana, helping to build healthcare facilities in underserved communities around the state, helping to build affordable housing as part of a public-private partnership with the city of New Orleans, job skills training program. So, man, they've been a huge supporter of our foundation. We appreciate that so much. They also have the Crown Royal rig that is showing up, which I don't know if you've seen this, but like two massive whiskey barrels that sit on the back of this 18-wheeler truck. But they're actually packing purple bags that people can come and pack, send to military overseas, which is awesome. Also, you can buy this starter. Oh, you know what? Wait a minute. I think, you have one at the room, right?
Yeah.
You can actually buy this satin starter jacket with the Crown Royal and NFL logos on it down at a pop-up in the quarter with all the proceeds going to the Foundation for Louisiana. So pretty awesome.
Drew, great to see you.
Yeah,
appreciate
man, you too.
Thanks so much.
All right.
There he is, Drew Brees, joining us on Radio Row. It is the Zach Gelb Show. You know, I'll tell you, so, you know, he said what he said about Eli. I think Eli's a Hall of Famer. I don't know if he'll get in tonight. I don't think he needs to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, but I wonder when you have the Manning last name and, right, you have two Super Bowls, two Super Bowl MVPs, and you beat the greatest dynasty of all time twice in the big game, if that puts you into the first-time eligibility and a first ballot Hall of Famer. So that's something to wonder, but you heard. And obviously they played together, but Antonio Gates, he got screwed last year. He should have been in the Hall of Fame, so I think he'll get in this year. But you look at the class this year, the guys that are up for it, and we'll find out tonight. Eric Allen, Jared Allen, Willie Anderson, Jahari Evans, Antonio Gates, Torrey Holt, Luke Kuechly, Eli Manning, Steve Smith Sr., who should already be in, Terrell Suggs, Fred Taylor, Adam Vinatieri, Reggie Wayne, surprised he's not in yet, Darren Woodson, and Marshall Yanda. Like, that's the guys you have to pick five. Not easy to do. I went to NFL.com, and just because it's NFL.com doesn't mean it's going to be right. But Adam Rank put out this morning, Adam Rank ranked who he thinks the five guys are that are going to get into the Hall of Fame this year. And he had Vinatieri, Torrey Holt, Antonio Gates, Luke Kuechly, and then he did go with Eli Manning. So that's one man's opinion in Adam Rank. All righty, we'll take a timeout. Zach Gelb here with you on Radio Row. When we come on back, Jason McCourty will join us live on set. All righty, welcome back in inside the Convention Center in New Orleans. Day number four of Radio Row. Zach Gelb here with you. We welcome in a Super Bowl champion. It'd be funny if I introduced him just as his brother and pretend to do the whole interview. And then people would be like, oh, this guy doesn't know who he was, this dumb radio host.
I would walk off.
Yeah. It's already happened to us this week with Warren Sapp. Wonderful stuff. But now joining us, of course, Jason McCourty.
I'm doing well. Appreciate you having me.
How many times when you do this is like someone cheesily just introduce you, they go, oh, he's the better McCourty.
All the time. Or ask me which one is better looking and all of that. So you kind of just roll with it, and we can't stand each other, so it makes it easier to riff on one another.
You've become a media star. Everyone wants a piece of you. You're on Good Morning Football for all those years. Now you're doing the games with our colleague Tiki Barber, NFL on CBS. And then ESPN, what's it like working with Stephen A?
Oh, it's cool, man. Stephen A, you know the one thing, man. He knows how to entertain, and you learn a lot from him throughout the show, but in the breaks as well. So I've had a blast this year. Obviously, you just said leaving Good Morning Football. I didn't know what was going to be what once the show moved to L.A. So for me to be able to call games with Catalon and Tiki and the whole crew at CBS, and then to be able to still do some studio stuff with ESPN, Orlovsky, Harry Douglas, Shefty, Andrew Hawkins, Greeny, all of those guys have been awesome.
I love Orlovsky. So when Orlovsky was first getting into the media business, he would come on in my show in New Jersey.
Yeah.
Which it was like a 500-watt radio station. And then I got him on all these other shows around the country. I'm still waiting for my 10% kick from him. But I'm going to
let him know that.
I'm really disappointed in Dan. His food takes suck. What he did with the Reese's peanut butter cup
I've seen him. I've seen him do that with Mentos as well, where he just does the same thing and just spits it out like that. He wasn't doing that.
He's like a bird
for the camera. Like he really eats things. Like it's very weird.
And for people that don't know, he had the Reese's peanut butter cup, and I guess he doesn't like the milk chocolate, so he would bite around the milk chocolate to just get to the peanut butter, and then just eat the peanut butter. And when you saw how little peanut butter was there, it's like, dude, just. Go get a jar of peanut butter, put it on a stick, and then eat the peanut butter.
He's a UConn guy, so he's a little weird.
Jason McCourty here with us. So when you work with Stephen A., and you know that you're going to challenge him on something or disagree, does like anxiety kind of creep in just wondering? Do you get nervous to do that?
No, not at all. I think that's more for me, like growing up, that's what barbershop sports talk was like, where guys had different opinions and you'd go back and forth of trying to prove while you're right. But at the end of the day, it's all fun and it's love. So that's why I think First Take is such a good show, because you have personalities, whether it is Stephen A., whether it's Dan O. when we're on, whoever's on there, like you're taking your point of view, but you're trying to do it in a fun and an entertaining way. And that's what sports are. We all have our own takes and all of that, but we're able to do it in that type of atmosphere and have a blast doing it.
Have you worked with Mad Dog Russo before?
I haven't. I've met Mad Dog, but I haven't. He's on Wednesday, so I haven't had a chance.
You know what's going to happen? He will be the guy that comes up to you. Devin, good to see you. Three Super Bowls. Belichick, you know, unbelievable. Oh, that's Jason? No.
And I'll have the whole conversation, and I won't correct him. I would just be Devin. As long as I went and did a terrible job, everybody would believe that it really was Dev.
And for people that can't see, Devin McCourty is to the right of us. Your Super Bowl, obviously, with the Patriots. The play that you made in the end zone where you broke it up, just when the Super Bowl, right, comes around on Sunday, that has to be on your mind. Just take us through that play.
Yeah, I think the lead up to that play, that was my 10th year in the NFL, never made it to the playoffs. So to get that opportunity to play on that stage after going to four Super Bowls, watching my brother play in that team, for me to be out there and to have such a big play in that game, I think the X's and O's of it all, they gave us a similar play earlier in that game, and we talked about it on the bench, and when they came back to it, to go out there and make that play. And in the moment, you don't think how big of a play it is. And then obviously when the score ends up 13-3, you realize it. So I think for me, just my entire journey to get to that point and be a part of a Super Bowl and to make a game-changing play like that was just a phenomenal feeling.
That's right. I remember the first time I talked to you was 2012.
Yeah.
In Indianapolis.
Yep.
Was it JW Marriott or something?
Yeah.
Where we had you on Radio Row, and you go from being a fan watching your brother
down
to
there with the family, yeah.
Eventually getting one of yours. What was the party like after the game?
The party's
always
awesome, man. So the first time my brother won the Super Bowl in Arizona, I stayed for the game. I went to the after party with him and all of that. And to do that, to be down on the field when they were passing the trophy, and I never touched it, but as an NFL player, to witness it that close, it just gives you more of that burning desire. So being at his after party, knowing that I wasn't a part of the victory, to fast forward to actually now being a part of it, we had a blast. That entire, for me, we were talking about this yesterday. We ran into Darius Slay, and we talked about playing in the Super Bowl, and Dev talked about when you win the conference championship game, everybody's so excited, and he remembers telling teammates, like, this isn't what it's for. And I said to Slay, I said, man, the hell with what he's talking about. When I won the AFC championship game, those next 2 weeks,
you weren't in the penthouse for years.
I enjoyed it because even that accomplishment to get there meant so much to me, because I didn't have the same experiences that he did. And a lot of guys go through that, where it took a long time. Ran into DeAndre Hopkins' mom the other night and talked to her about him now in his 12th year of getting an opportunity to play in a Super Bowl with all he's accomplished and a Hall of Fame level career that he's had. It's just such a cool experience. And when you are able to reach the mountaintop of your profession, no matter what it is, it takes a lot of hard work to get there.
Jason McCourty here with us. I actually think this is interesting, and I saw him the other night, but I didn't bring it up because we were all playing blackjack, and like, I don't want to ask these kind of questions.
I'm hoping you won, but yeah.
I just lost 100 bucks. Thanks, Patrick Peterson, and also Brian McFadden. But I'm sitting there, and I'm Jason Kelsey was in the room, and Kylie Kelsey was there too. It was like six of us playing blackjack, And Jason Kelsey's an Eagle, right?
He's yeah.
like Mr. Philadelphia.
Yep.
His brother plays for the Chiefs. His, you know, maybe soon-to-be sister-in-law is obviously a big factor of the game as well. And I go, I know Kylie grew up as an Eagles fan, and Jason is Mr. Eagle. I feel as if they're rooting for the Eagles on Sunday as Travis plays in the big game. You know, that's got to be just a weird, and you understand it because the twin
yeah.
dynamic and the brother dynamic, that's just got to be bizarre.
Yeah. For me, I was hoping my brother lost in the Super Bowls he was in just because I got tired of watching him go to Super Bowls to that extent. But, no, it has to be extremely hard. I have no problem rooting against my brother. I'm sure Jason's the same way. But it's that weird feeling.
Hold on. I'm calling cap on this. You say that because you guys have this thing like, oh, we're always making jokes. Down deep, you're really rooting against your brother?
I won't say rooting against them, and I think they could probably appreciate this as well. They played in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, and you obviously want to win the game, but I guarantee you, for Jason Kelsey, you're playing in that game, and you're hoping the score is 42-43 because you're hoping Travis has the game of his life, but you just end up on top. And I would say the same thing for me and Dev.
So are the relationships – I'm not saying your relationship with your brother isn't as strong as your teammates,
yeah.
but – because of that family atmosphere, it's almost as if you got multiple family members.
Oh, for sure. And the relationship with your sibling is so different because you think about it for those two guys, it's not only being in the NFL that you become your teammates on, but they had this dream from little kids, and you've watched each other's journey to get to where you are. So you've actually witnessed the hard work that somebody has put in or the sacrifices that somebody has put in to get to that point. I remember the moment where the Chiefs win the Super Bowl and Travis goes up to Jason. He almost doesn't want to celebrate
yeah.
because he feels for his brother of just losing the Super Bowl. So it's such a cool thing to be a part of. Yes, there's heartbreak in it when one has to lose. But to think about being on the stage of a Super Bowl and playing against your brother.
Weird.
For me and Dev to be able to get to that point and be on the field together. I remember walking in pregame and you see all the celebrities. Conor McGregor was just walking down the sideline. But you just think back in that moment. I tried to take it all in. It's just like, damn, I'm here with my twin brother in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, your embrace also at the AFC Championship
game. Yeah.
I remember the mic'd up.
Yeah.
I thought it was even more powerful than after the Super Bowl. And then also, when you look at Travis and Jason Kelsey, that mic'd up version, him, Jason, and his mom.
Yeah.
And like he was just so
go
choked
celebrate
up. He's like, you were the star this week. Go celebrate with Trav.
Yeah.
You know, that was really something. All right, let's get to the cornerbacks in this game, Jason McCourty. I look at the Eagles. Quinyon Mitchell's a stud. You got the exciting whites. I always love this. With Reed Blankenship and also Cooper DeJean.
Yeah.
You know, I lived in Philly for 7 years, so we call him Cooper DeJean.
Yeah, really. Yeah.
And then you got Darius Big Play Slay. This secondary for the Eagles with the pieces up front with Jalen Carter. You got Zach Bond as a linebacker. And Nolan Smith. This is one damn good defense.
Yeah, for sure. And a ton of credit to Vic Fangio. You know, I got a chance to call one of their games this year, two of them, and got a chance to talk to Zach Bond, and he talked about when they first installed this defense, like, it was hard for everybody to figure out. And he said Vic Fangio demands perfection from all of the guys. And Bond said there was moments where I went to Vic, and I'm like, you sure? Like, I should be an off-the-ball linebacker because this thing doesn't seem like it's working out. And they came out after the bye week, and you mentioned Cooper DeJean. He goes in there at nickel instead of Avante Maddox, and Maddox is still progressing, done his job as well. But these guys just have turned it up to a different level. And I look at, when you look at a dominant defense, when you have somebody on every single level that's playing at an all-pro level, it makes it very hard to score and do things on them. Jalen Carter is unstoppable up front for them. And then you mentioned Nolan Smith. And with those two guys when on the same side of the defense, what they're able to do, their communication, their running games, the season that Zach Bond has had. And then you mentioned the guys in the secondary. And then bringing back a guy like C.J. Gardner-Johnson. Attitude, what he brings to that defense. So you look at this matchup, it's so much fun because no matter who's on the defensive side of the ball, Mahomes figures it out. And it doesn't have to be a 300-yard pass game, but it's the moments that are crucial that he steps up and makes plays.
And that's the thing, because right, you played with Brady for a little bit, and you could go up against teams. Like, I remember that divisional round game, I'm pretty sure, against the Chargers.
Yep.
People go, Chargers, better team, 1-53.
Yep.
But as long as you have Brady, as for the rest of that locker room, even if the other team could be better on paper, when you got the GOAT, or, you know, in Mahomes' case, one of the GOATs,
yeah,
that's got to just give a different confidence to the rest of the locker
room. The belief is unreal when you have a guy that can get it done. And I know, because I was on – I played 13 years, and I would say the majority of my years, probably 11 of the 13, the years I was with Brady would probably be the only ones where you're out there and you know, hey, all we got to do is get the ball back one more time. If we get the ball back one more time, we can sit on this bench and watch Brady go down and score. When you're on defense, you're on a team where you're out there in a two-minute drill on defense, you're like, dang, if we give up a score, it's a wrap. Like, we have no shot at winning the game. It's tough to fight through that. When you give up a touchdown in the first quarter, and next thing you know, the other team has 13 points, and you're like, it's going to be tough to win this game. It's hard mentally to keep pushing past that. So, definitely, when you have a guy, it changes everything.
My memory could be a little hazy on this one. You played Mahomes twice, right? AFC Championship game, and then you guys played in the regular season that year?
Yeah, in 2018.
When the first two times, the only two times you saw him, what were, like, the immediate impressions? Did you know that this dude was just ridiculous?
Well, by the time we played them in 18, they had already, like, we were deep enough in the season. That game ended up, we won that game 43-40. But you turned the film on at that point, and they were already, remember, that was when they were playing the Atlanta Falcons. He throws the ball 60 yards in the air to Tyreek Hill. So you saw from the very beginning when he was out there of what it was going to be. And then that offense with Andy Reid. So first impressions was like, damn, I better make sure the safety's behind me, that I have some help when they're on offense so I'm not out here getting exposed. So, I mean, he's just – you don't typically see that. Like, somebody as great as Mahomes, like, not have rough patches. Like, as soon as he stepped on the scene, he's been that guy.
It's funny you say that the way that you did. I remember texting your brother after the AFC Championship game. I go, no one saw you on the screen, but you played a heck of a game, because it was just, let Cheetah beat you.
There's a mic'd up clip where he's saying to Tyreek Hill, like, nobody at home knows that we're double teaming you every play. They just think we're shutting you down. So it's a frustrating day for you, but for us, it's a glorious one.
Who wins this game? You go with the better team, or do you go with the guys that have just been here before and done it?
So every week of the playoffs, I've picked against the Kansas City Chiefs, and the fans have let me know that I'm an idiot for doing so. And once again, I'm going to pick against the Chiefs, because this Philly, and it's not that I hate the Kansas City Chiefs. Or
hot take hack from ESPN now, McCourty.
People are like, well, McCourty, he's a Patriot, so he doesn't want them to beat their dynasty. I'm like, I wasn't a part of the Patriots dynasty. Yeah. I won one Super Bowl, and I don't care which dynasty is better. I just watch the Eagles and everything that they've been able to do. Saquon Barkley, the season he's had, I think they're the team that I think wins this game.
He's Jason McCourty. Jason, always great to see you. Thank you.
Always, man. Appreciate it.
Good to see you. There's Jason McCourty. We'll take a timeout. We'll come on back. The Pro Football Hall of Famer, B-Doc, Brian Dawkins, join us next. Alrighty, welcome back inside the Convention Center Radio Row. This is the Zach Gelb Show, coast to coast on the Infinity Sports Network. And now we welcome in the Pro Football Hall of Famer. You know, I think he should crawl out and do the introduction. I was in Philly a few weeks ago. The music came on, and that place, man, you're one of the most beloved Eagles of all time. There's just a certain pop when Brian Dawkins is in the house and he joins us right now. B-Doc, what's going on?
I'm blessed, man. Blessed to be here. Blessed to be here.
Well, I appreciate you coming on. We'll talk about Berenguer and Lilly in just a bit with you. I want to start you off, though, with Brandon Graham, right? One of the legendary Philadelphia Eagles, made the biggest play in the history of the franchise with the strip sack up against Tom Brady in the Super Bowl.
Still waiting on that statue to be made. Still waiting on that statue.
Well, you know what happens.
Yes.
Quarterbacks, they get the statues whenever.
Yeah.
For everybody else, you got to retire, and it seems like you know, he's playing, and this is going to be probably his last game. When you look back at his career, just what stands out to you, you know, regardless of what happens on Sunday for the great Brandon Graham?
Well, I think when he tells it, you know, better than I do, obviously, because it's his story, but he just talks about how, you know, in the beginning that his head wasn't completely in it and he was counted out, and all of a sudden it clicked. It clicked, and he began to do things from a different place, and now one of the franchise legends of the Philadelphia Eagles, and potentially could go out with another ring. So, I mean, again, to see his journey is also an indication for individuals out there who've struggled in the beginning. But it's not about how you start. It's how you finish. And he's a testament to that.
Talking about defensive players, we had Myles Garrett on the other day. And all the Philadelphia media was right around the set. They know I went to Temple. So they go, oh, Zach's going to ask him something about the Eagles. And Myles Garrett said, Philadelphia would be a hell of a destination. And those Eagles fans are already kind of making their pitches. What would your reaction be if you get the alert, or if Howie calls you up and he goes, hey, B-Doc, the Eagles, we got Myles Garrett?
No, man, you got to – if you get Myles Garrett, a generational talent, on the same field with the young generational talent that they already have in Carter. Like, I don't know how you stop that. I don't know how you – so I'm not saying you won't need talent everywhere else because they still do. But when you have that defensive player of the year with another dude that's battling for the defensive player in the year on the same defensive front, like, it's absolute wrecking havoc for any offensive unit. So, I mean, I don't see how I don't see how other teams won't do whatever it takes to prevent that from happening. I'll just say it like that.
You got Jalen Carter. You got Nolan Smith. You got Zach Bond, who could be the defensive player of the year. You look around at the secondary. You got Darius Big Play Slay. You got Quinyon Mitchell. You got the exciting whites as well with Cooper DeJean and Reed Blankenship. Man, a lot of names on this defense. And I'm most excited for this one. Chiefs offensive line, Eagles front seven. That's where I think the Eagles have an advantage. If they're going to win this game, that front seven's going to have to come to play.
Yeah, and absolutely. And most teams will always tell you this. Anybody who plays the game of football, it all starts up front, right? So if you have a defensive line or offensive line, whichever unit can do the most damage to one play, you know, on the other side of the line of scrimmage as far as that is concerned, that team is probably going to win games. And again, the Philadelphia Eagles have been trending in that direction. They started off as a specific amount of pressures during the regular season, the first four games, but after that bye week, to me, some conversations were had, accountability was then offered and given, and then they came out to be a completely different defense. So this unit you see in the playoffs is a completely different, more confident, more disciplined group than you've seen in Philadelphia in the last couple of years.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to hear your answer on this, Brian Dawkins. Andy Reid, right, everyone was so happy for him when he got his first Super Bowl. Right, he's won two more since then, one at the Eagles' expense. You know, the first one against the Eagles, no one was thrilled, right, if you're a Philadelphia Eagle fan to lose in the Super Bowl, but people love Andy so much. If he beats him twice, will you be happy for Andy, just wondering?
Well, I'm going to be happy for him. But I'm not. I don't want them to win. You see what I'm saying? Like, because I'm always have love for Big Red
relationships
and Spag. It's not just him, but Spag. So it's not just him, Andy Reid on the team. It's like Spags, Tobe, like, and some of the other assistant coaches who are now position coaches used to be like managers and things like that here when I was in Philadelphia. So they've grown, obviously matured into different roles. But my point is, it's not just Andy. You know, I've spent time with Spags. He was my defensive back coach for a couple of years. So, like, I have love for those two dudes. So, obviously, if they win it, I'll be happy for them. But at the same time, like, I want the Birds to win, brother.
Assistant coaches, right, they don't make the Hall of Fame. But Spagnuolo, he should be in.
Yeah, but there's no way you can tell me that he doesn't make it to the Hall of Fame, being that he is the winningest coach as far as Super Bowls are concerned, defensive coordinator in the history of the game of football. So think about that. So there's no way you can't tell me that at some point, I'm not saying, you know, first ballot, none of those things, but I'm talking about at some point, Spags needs to be in there, especially I don't see them not competing for championships just this year. Excuse me, not – How do I say this? I see them competing for more championships
for years to come.
So for years to come, that's what I was looking for.
Yeah. You got it. Before we let you run, we'll talk about Baringer and Lilly in just a second. When we get to Jalen Hurts, all this guy does is win. And you know it, even when you win, there's still some criticism. People always have to find things. And this is a team sport. And people go, you know what? Jalen's got too much around him. And let me tell you something. If there wasn't enough around him, he wasn't playing well, everyone would crush him. Does Jalen Hurts just get too much disrespect?
Well, disrespect, yes, he gets too much disrespect. I'm okay with them expecting him to do more, because you should. Like, and that's the like crazy thing for me. When I see it, I see what some people are saying, because I see the exact same thing. There's certain aspects of his game that could be better. Why is that a bad thing? That's my point. Like, as a defender, as a guy who always was constantly trying to be overly critical of myself when I watch film, like, I'm looking for those things to get better. So if I see those things, or if I hear from someone, you know, that's critiquing me, not criticizing, but critiquing me, and they point out something to me that I can get better at, why wouldn't I use that to then get better? So, like, for me, I see what I see, and I see that, yes, there's things that he could be doing better, and I want him to do that. But again, he should want to do that, and I believe he does. So it's not a bad thing to critique a player. But just to hate on him, like, I don't agree with the hate on him. But I do invite the critiquing. I do invite that.
So you think there's a different gear for Jalen Hurts
Absolutely.
To get to?
Because we
which is pretty damn cool because he's already been in two Super Bowls.
But we've seen it. So it's not like we haven't seen him play at that level. We saw in the last Super Bowl, saw him play
Best
at that
Best player in
level.
The field.
Exactly. So we saw. So here's the thing. When you it's like I can't use that. when you show somebody something and they see that you can do it at that level, I was going to say another word, but it might trigger some people. When you show them this thing that you can do at this level, but then you then go back down to playing at a lower level, and that person who saw you play at this level is constantly saying, well, I saw that. Well, no, I saw that. No, I'm sorry. Why is that a bad thing? To me, that's a great thing. You played here. That's what we expect you to be. Matter of fact, that's not your ceiling. This is the ceiling that you – this is your last ceiling. So there's still potential for you to even – surpasses that
breakthrough
so that's my mindset when it comes to Jalen Hurts.
It's like me being a tall guy. Anytime you go in like a low place, your head hits the ceiling. You want his head to hit the ceiling pretty much. That's what you want.
Yeah. All righty,
tell us what you're doing today with Berenger and Lilly.
So being blessed to have the platform that I have to be able to spread information to individuals, when I heard about this, I'm a very proactive individual, right, as far as my health is concerned. I've been that way as an athlete, obviously. But when I heard about these things that could potentially affect my parents, both my parents have type 2 diabetes and high blood pressure. So those are the two parameters, if you will, that could potentially have you going down the risk of having a kidney disease. And so the It Takes Two campaign is that it takes two tests, a blood test and a urine test. It takes you and your doctor teaming up to get those tests. But ultimately, it's to find out if you are in that group of population. There's like 35 million people that could potentially have kidney disease. But the bad thing about it is there's only a few of them that know that they have it. Right, so this is, you go to testyourkidneys.com to find out more information. But if you fit this profile, again, high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, or someone in your family does, please go to testyourkidneys.com to find out the information so that you can ask your doctor to have these tests so that you can be here healthier longer.
Always great to see you.
Yeah.
Good health. Appreciate you doing this.
Appreciate you. God bless. Go Birds!
There he is, B-Talk. Brian Dawkins joining us on Radio Row. And this portion of the show is brought to you by Ethos Life. The easy way to get life insurance in 10 minutes, up to $2 million in coverage and no medical exams, and just a few health questions. Get your free quote at checkethos.com. Not available in all states. You know, I'll tell you, I thought that was an interesting perspective from Brian Dawkins that you don't really hear. Because you would expect, right, former Eagle, very close to the organization still. You know, he was on the field just a few weeks ago running out. I think it was during the divisional round, yeah. Because that was for the divisional round when you had the LA Rams up against Philadelphia Eagles. And you would think that he would defend Jalen Hurts. And he wasn't being critical of Jalen Hurts. He said, we've seen Jalen Hurts play all the way up here. And he said, it's okay to pretty much criticize people if they're deserving of criticism, or you want to just see them get to that different level. And, you know, the more and more I think about this, when we get to the negative storylines potentially on Monday, you know, if the Chiefs lose, I think the thing that we're going to talk about the most is the offensive line. Just thinking from a negative standpoint, right? Chiefs lose, why do they lose? Offensive line. When you look at the Eagles, I would think that the biggest national conversation, if they lose, is going to be the quarterback and Jalen Hurts. And I saw Jalen Hurts 2 years ago in the Super Bowl outplay Patrick Mahomes, but he lost the game. So can Hurts play at a high level? Absolutely. But you got to win. Because last year or 2 years ago, you were the best player in the game, and people get on him for that one mistake with the fumble that went for the touchdown, they end up losing. So it's one of those things where I just look at this game, and from a negative standpoint, if the Chiefs lose, I think we're talking offensive line. If the Eagles lose, I think we're talking about the quarterback. And I say this all the time. Most time, Mondays after a game, we're either talking about a coach or we're talking about a quarterback. 99.9% of the time. It's the way we dumb it down. It's the way we do this thing. on local radio, national radio, however, you know, TV, however you usually consume it, because the quarterbacks and the coaches are the easiest things to discuss. So I can't wait for the game coming up on Sunday, and I'm going to be really curious to see what we're talking about. And, hey, you look at a Mark Andrews, by the way. That was like the one time this football season I remember we weren't talking about a quarterback or a coach after a big game on Sunday. I mean, you take a glance back at Mark Andrews when he dropped that football. Clearly, that was the number one talking point for that game. But even still, people are on Harbaugh. People are on also Lamar Jackson as well, which I really didn't think was all that fair. So here we are at the convention center. Zach Gelb here with you. We still got a whole lot more to come. What a loaded show this has been so far. When we got things started with Emmitt Smith, we also had on Cam Jordan, Bijan Robinson, Drew Brees. Just heard from Brian Dawkins. When we come on back next, I have never talked to this guy on this show before. Former New England Patriot, Teddy Bruschi. And he is supposed to be joined alongside with DeMar Hamlin as well. So we'll have Teddy Bruschi and DeMar Hamlin coming up next. And also one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, Joe Montana. He's going to stop by, and that's going to be in about 25 minutes from now. And there's a lot to get to with Joe. Obviously talk about Hurts, obviously talk about Mahomes, and also the Niners and what they're going to do with Brock Purdy. Because this season did not go the way that we expected it to for the 49ers. Not going into the season. Eagles, Lions, 49ers, three best teams in the NFC, right? And the 49ers didn't make the playoffs because of the bevy of injuries and the plethora of injuries that they did suffer. So now, when we take a look at Brock Purdy, where's Montana at? How much does he still believe in him? And should he think that the Niners should end up paying him this year? So we'll get to that coming up when we return from Radio Row in New Orleans. Teddy Bruschi. Teddy Bruschi! And DeMar Hamlin will join us next.